Radio Ranch in beautiful Sugar Land, Texas, where life truly is sweeter. It's the Bombastic Blogcast for Tuesday, February 13th, 2023. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
There yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, and one heck of a nice guy. And to get things started officially, let's take care of
the Daily Datagram.
Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets, you get to make the call. It says here, if you're never scared, embarrassed, or hurt, it means you never take chances. Oh. Yep, and that means you're not likely to get sued.
There must be somebody I can sue.
Let's move along now to the so-called educational part of the blogcast. Here we go.
Twisted history.
Big stuff.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
Be sure.
Some cool, some not so cool. Just the same, you need to know your twisted history.
Yes, you do.
You might be quizzed.
Okay. There you go. Well, kids, it was on this day in 1914 in New York City. The American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers was established to protect the copyrighted musical compositions of its members. The organization did quite well, right up until the internet. And it was on this day in 1960, with the success of a nuclear test codenamed Je Bois Bleu, France became the fourth country to possess nuclear weapons. Then they issued a statement that read, "Now, enough with the white flag jokes.
No good will come of this."
The thing I find terrifying about government overreach is it's like the old frog in the pot of boiling water adage, right? You put a frog in a pot of cold water. You put the pot on the stove, you heat it up slowly, and eventually that poor frog is going to boil when the water boils because he's not going to notice it getting too hot. Now, you take a frog and you throw him into a pot of boiling water, he's going to jump right out. Well, you and I are a lot like that. Our government is constantly reaching for more and more power, and they always get it, but it happens in such small increments over a long period of time, we don't notice it happening. That's where we are with the TSA. Federal overreach at its best. And I find it rather terrifying because they're now getting into this facial recognition technology at the TSA. And the expansion of this is now in some pretty stunning proportions. They've recently begun implementing facial recognition at nearly 30 airports across the country, and they're planning now to expand this to more than 400 federalized airports in the coming years. Well, how many coming years? We don't know yet. And they don't generally make announcements to that effect, but it'll be over coming years. Now, that's a long period of time. And people like you and I are going to go and take our occasional air trips and we're going to notice this encroachment on the part of our government very slowly, if we notice it at all. So this move has sparked a pretty robust debate over privacy and civil liberties. And meanwhile, the TSA is over here assuring travelers that they can opt out of the scan by notifying an agent. And you're going to look at your watch and you're saying, "Hey, the plane's leaving too soon. I don't have time to do that. I'll just go along with it." See, so you just go along with it and you don't think about it. But there's the government learning more and more about you, even though there's nothing stunning to know about you. They just get more and more information. Now, naturally, the TSA and the government has been issuing all these assurances that this new Cat 2 unit that they're going to be using are designed to enhance privacy by employing one-to-one verification. And, okay, maybe that's true. But the concerns are still there. TSA claims that photos are compared against government-issued IDs and then deleted. But the language in their media release suggests that photos may be retained in a limited testing environment to evaluate the technology's effectiveness. See, that's how they usher it in amidst protests. Now, the lack of clarity on the scope and duration of this technology, this data retention, is leaving a lot of flyers skeptical about the true intentions behind this technological push. One thing that you want to remember about this, and that is, ever since the TSA was enacted after 9/11, and this is a George W. Bush thing, right? Ever since the TSA has been in existence, they haven't caught a single terrorist. Not one. But they'll confiscate your new tube of toothpaste or your bottle of hairspray. They'll confiscate that. Yet they have not caught a single solitary terrorist. So, all the while, you have the TSA making you think that this is mandatory, and it's not. Don't let the TSA use facial recognition on you. Just don't. Now, in a rare show of bipartisan agreement, Senators John Kennedy of Louisiana, love that guy, and Jeff Merkley have voiced, I don't know where he's from, but anyhow, they voiced their opposition to the unregulated use of Cat 2 technology. Now, these are reasonable men, okay? They voiced their opposition to the unregulated use of this. Sounds reasonable to me, right? And they argue that the scanners could be exploited. And the travelers are not only are not adequately informed about their right to opt out. And their proposed Traveler Privacy Protection Act of 2023 seeks to prohibit the use of these scanners and would require explicit congressional authorization for any future use of facial recognition technology at airports. Again, that's Senator John Kennedy and Jeff Merkley. Now, the TSA's rollout of facial recognition technology is being framed as a means to automate the current manual ID checking process with no intention of using it for surveillance or law enforcement purposes. Really? I'm sorry, but their word is just not good enough for me. Because these reassurances provided by the TSA have done little to quell the fears of anyone who sees this as a step towards a national surveillance state. Because that's exactly what it is, a national surveillance state. The bipartisan support for regulating or banning the technology is noteworthy. You've got co-sponsors including Senator Roger Marshall, who's a Republican, and Democrat Senator Ed Markey, Elizabeth Warren, as well as Independent Socialist Senator Bernie Sanders. They're against this, too. Imagine that. So this diverse political coalition kind of underscores the widespread concern over the potential misuse of biometric data and the erosion of privacy rights. And that's the part that bothers me the most, the erosion of privacy rights. And, the further encroachment of government on our lives, our everyday lives. And as the implementation of facial recognition at airports progresses, and believe me, it will, the urgency to address these privacy concerns grows. Let's just hope that it grows enough. The TSA's initiative is seen by some as a test case for broader implications of surveillance technology. Just that word, surveillance, gives me a chill. And there's concern that this is raising the stakes for privacy advocates and civil libertarians to really get up and fight this stuff. Have you ever tried to fight the government? It's not an easy thing to do. Now, the debate over TSA's use of facial recognition technology is, it's emblematic of a larger debate about the balance between security and privacy. Again, let's go back to how many terrorists has the TSA stopped? How many have they caught since they've been in business since the early 2000s? Not one. But how many tubes of toothpaste and bottles of hairspray have they confiscated? Tons. So we should all be concerned. Because we, you and I, have to remain supremely vigilant and demand transparency and accountability to protect our fundamental rights. Because while the TSA's efforts to streamline airport security checks through facial recognition technology may offer some efficiency gains and may even be good for the budget, maybe you can get by in TSA with fewer people, who knows? Still, the potential costs to personal privacy and civil liberties are too great to ignore. I mean, it is supremely important that the public remains informed and engaged in any discussions about the use of this kind of technology. And also that lawmakers take decisive action to ensure that privacy protections keep pace with technological advancements. And that is a balance that I'm afraid is going to be too hard to stay on top of at all times. I had an interesting item come across my desk over the weekend from Main Street Press. They wrote that in the annals of political careers, few actions cast as long and dark a shadow as those that betray the trust of the public and exploit the vulnerable. Boy, is that a mouthful. And so true. So true. And they continue here. It is with a heavy heart that we revisit the troubling tenure of a former attorney general who, reports indicate, kept hundreds of black men incarcerated beyond their release dates to benefit from their labor at a pittance. So basically what this is about is recent revelations about this practice having stirred a lot of concern among citizens and advocates alike, particularly the advocates. And it was during the former attorney general's time in office that a strategy emerged to retain nonviolent offenders behind bars, not for the sake of public safety, but to maintain a steady supply of cheap labor for the state. Do you know who we're talking about? Could only be one of two people, right? Either Gavin Newsom, current governor of California, and it wasn't him, or Kamala Harris. Now, this decision came despite a Supreme Court ruling that mandated the reduction of California's overcrowded prisons due to conditions that amounted to cruel and unusual punishment. That's a pretty stunning term, you know. Cruel and unusual punishment covers a lot of territory. So in a move that would remind some people of some of the darkest periods of American history, these inmates were reportedly used for various state-run programs, including one that involved fighting wildfires. So these inmates faced the flames for approximately $2 a day. Way below minimum wage. And when you compare that price, $2 a day, to the danger they faced. Whoa. There's only one word that describes that, and that's exploitation. And think of all the ethical questions that that raises. Certainly casts a shadow over the legacy of Kamala Harris. Now, the implications of these actions, of course, are far-reaching. Not only does it suggest a disregard, a total disregard for the rights and dignity of the incarcerated individuals, but it also points to a systemic issue where economic benefits are placed above human values and the value of human life. The use of prison labor, especially under these kinds of exploitive conditions, undermines the very principles of justice and rehabilitation that the criminal justice system purports to uphold. Chain gangs, I mean, do they still have them? Well, apparently, we just don't hear about it. So, I mean, it's a fact that Kamala Harris actually argued in court to keep prisoners in California because the state couldn't afford to lose the cheap labor. So the decision to keep these men incarcerated for the sake of cheap labor didn't occur in isolation. You must understand that. It was part of a broader context where slow walking the parole process, you know, jumbling up the paperwork, the bureaucratic process to extend their time incarcerated. This became a subject of legal contention. Plaintiffs accused the state of dragging its feet, an allegation that the Attorney General's office denied, of course. But court filings revealed a different story, one where benchmarks were met, but the release of potential parolees was resisted to avoid impacting the labor programs. Wow. Yes, this has happened. This was happening in California. Now, the consequences of this kind of stuff extend beyond the prison walls. I mean, they affect families and communities, perpetuating cycles of poverty and disenfranchisement. Understand, I'm not coming to the defense of the incarcerated. I mean, if they committed crime, they need to do the time. I am a conservative. I'm a constitutional conservative. But when they've served the time, get them out. So when the state opts to treat humans as commodities, kind of sends a message that economic expediency trumps social justice. And that's certainly a message that echoes through society. It erodes trust in public institutions. Look at how much trust you and I have in the FBI these days, for instance. Now, the FBI, of course, isn't guilty of this sort of thing, but look at how the FBI has destroyed our trust in them over the last 10, 15, 20 years. So, as a nation, we've been reflecting on this chapter of our history because it comes pretty clear that accountability and reform are important, particularly accountability, because you're not going to have reform at all if there's no accountability, right? One can't happen without the other. And the use of prison labor, particularly when it borders on coercion, it's got to be exposed. And then safeguards have to be put in place to prevent the recurrence of this kind of stuff. Leaders and citizens alike must ensure that the pursuit of justice is never again compromised by the pursuit of profit. You know, this whole episode serves as a dark and stark reminder of the vigilance that we must utilize to safeguard the rights and dignity of everyone, especially those within the penal system. It's a call to action for a society that aspires to live up to its ideals of liberty and justice for all, to examine its practices, to correct its course when it strays from these foundational principles. We have a responsibility to ourselves as a society to make sure that abuses like this don't continue and aren't repeated. Because when you really get down to it, it's just a cleaner form of slavery. Aaron Pan over at the Epoch Times writes that former GOP presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy said that President Joe Biden is not going to secure the nomination for the Democrat Party due to concerns over his mental acuity following the Justice Department's special counsel report. Well, Mr. Ramaswamy indicated that the Democratic establishment will replace the president with, in Vivek's words, another puppet, or actually in his words, he said a different puppet. Well, think about it. Certainly within the Democrat Party, there's got to be possibly dozens, if not more, willing puppets. People in the wings holding their arms up, waving their arms, saying, here I am. I'll be happy to carry out Barack Obama's mission. Yeah? I mean, it's certainly not beyond the realm of possibility. So Ramaswamy was participating in an interview with Fox News, and this was on February 8th, so that would be last Thursday. And he was discussing Special Counsel Robert Hur's report on the investigation into Biden's handling of classified documents, and Ramaswamy said, the managerial class And the Democratic Party, and I believe in the deep state, has decided that they've lost their use for Joe Biden as a puppet. Now, what was it? Yesterday? Yeah. It was in yesterday's blogcast. I said that Joe Biden will not be running in November. He's probably going to be out of the picture, certainly by May. But, I mean, the timeline doesn't matter. What matters is he will not be the candidate in November. There's no way he can do it. He's deteriorating too quickly. So anyhow, Ramaswamy continues, says, I think they laid a trap for him. They invited him effectively to prove to the American people that he doesn't have the mental acuity to do it. He fell into their trap, and now they're laying the groundwork for the coming 3 months to sideline him and actually put up who the real nominee is going to be. Well, you've heard Vivek speaking before. The man is sharp. He's got his finger on the pulse of the political realm here in this country. I mean, you know, the guy's no dummy. He's a biotech entrepreneur. He's only 38 years old. He's fabulously wealthy. He also predicted the Democrat Party would consider Michelle Obama as its presidential candidate. But Michelle has made it clear time and time again she's not interested in the job. She doesn't want anything to do with that job. Can she be coerced? Well, I don't know. I don't personally know the lady, but I would imagine that if you threw enough money at her or made the right kinds of threats, I suppose they could talk her into it. But here again, I think they have dozens of other more willing candidates, people who would really want to do the job. See, there was a 388-page report that was released February 8th, again, that was last Thursday, where Mr. Herr found that Biden willfully retained and disclosed classified materials after his vice presidency when he was a private citizen. But the special counsel decided not to prosecute him because of a lack of sufficient evidence to establish his guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. And then they also tossed in the president's poor memory. They're going to take it easy on the elderly man with poor memory. The report described Biden as a sympathetic, well-meaning elderly man with a poor memory. They also referred to the president's mental fitness as hazy, which it certainly is, significantly limited, and showed signs of diminished faculties and faulty memory. Now, the report highlighted that President Biden struggled to remember significant events, such as the timing of his son's death, the duration of his vice presidency, or the Afghanistan debate. And following the report, Biden held a press conference dismissing the special counsel's findings. He said, my memory's fine. President Biden said angrily, while all these press people were out there clamoring for attention, clamoring to be recognized so they could ask a question. But he mixed up the presidents of Mexico and Egypt during the press conference. You no doubt heard that. Then the White House also refuted the report's findings about the president's memory, calling them gratuitous and politically motivated. And then when asked about how President Biden handled questions regarding his mental fitness during the press conference, Ramaswamy said it seemed like a form of elder abuse. Now, that's a term that has been getting tossed around a lot lately, elder abuse. He said, this is a man who was clearly personally hurt, personally insulted, but didn't have the mental acuity to process or even communicate the extent to which he'd been hurt or insulted. So the reality is, this man is a puppet. The puppet masters who are wielding him have lost their use. He said, it's really sad, a sad situation to watch play out in plain sight. This is the president of the United States. Great point. Can you imagine how we are being talked about by the other nations around the world? Then Vivek pointed out that President Biden failed to unite the country and advised the GOP frontrunner candidate, Donald Trump, to take this opportunity to unite the country and secure the win in November, which I think he's going to do. I mentioned this in yesterday's podcast, that last week was a very, very bad week for Biden, but it was a very good week for Trump. And Trump was speaking in, South Carolina? I forgot where. But he held a huge rally. And in the rally, there were throngs of young people. I'm talking about college age. Young people who were just chanting Trump, 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 or we love Trump. It was a chorus that continued during the whole event. Now, there are calls to invoke the 25th Amendment, and they started by Claudia Tenney, who's a Republican in New York. Imagine that, a New York Republican. There are a couple of them, you know, which is more than we can say for Illinois. Anyhow, she wrote a letter to Merrick Garland on Thursday calling for the removal of President Biden through the 25th Amendment following the special counsel's report, which, of course, is excellent timing. In the letter, she expressed grave concerns regarding the president's mental fitness. Well, Senator Josh Hawley, I like him, the guy from Missouri. Wow, he's good. And he agreed with Ms. Tenney, noting that the president can't have it both ways. He said the special counsel's report and Biden's embarrassing press conference last night make clear he should either resign as unfit or face criminal prosecution. Merrick Garland has a duty to invoke the 25th Amendment to his fellow cabinet members or prosecute Biden. If he won't prosecute, then invoke the 25th now. Now, Hawley posted that on X. Then, Representative Ronnie Jackson, Republican out of my state of Texas, a former White House physician, said the president is mentally unfit and should be removed. Joe Biden is completely mentally unfit for president. Even his own DOJ says so. We've known this for a long time, but now Biden's health has become a national security issue. Remove. Come on, let's move on into the comedy corner. Get some chuckles from Buddy Fitzpatrick.
I bought a new car. I bought a Nissan Versa. I don't know if anybody else drives the cheapest car in the world. Anybody? Anybody? Do you really? Do you drive one? I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Be careful. Be careful, really. It's horrible. They're always hydroplaning. Not even raining and it hydroplanes. That's really, right? It's got the baby horn, so it never tells the other drivers how angry you really are. I always regret using it. Hey, Rambo!
Lady!
It's horrible. They should make cars with like 10 horn sounds around them so you can choose the sound you need depending on the situation that you're in. I don't know why they don't do that. They'd be a lot more polite too, wouldn't they? You know, you're driving, you see somebody trying to cut you off. Whoa, 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 whoa. You're at a light, the light turns green, the guy in front of you just sits there. Hey, 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 hey. Hey. See somebody walking, they stumble and fall. That would be the way that would work, right? Yes. I always laugh when I see a smart car. I love smart cars. They just crack me up. Anybody drive a smart car? I'm so sorry if you do, because they just make me laugh. Have you ever been on a highway and you see somebody driving a smart car and you look in at the guy driving and they're driving like nothing's wrong? Isn't that weird? Right? Because they should be like this. I know, right? I don't know. You know. They're not. They're driving like nothing. Because it looks like it was in an accident, but the front survived. And he hasn't figured out that the back is missing yet. I actually think the smart car looks like the car you put in the trunk of the real car you drive in case that breaks down. Then you have a spare car and you just pop it out, start it up. Right? One time somebody, an audience member, was like a little hurt. He's like, I drive a smart car and they're very good. They're safe, you know, they're great in the snow. And I said, yeah, could you just pick them up, shake them off, put them back down, just drive away. It's good to be here. I'm feeling good. I fell not too long ago. Oh my gosh, I was in New York, had a bad fall. And I realized the moment that I fell, I'm actually at that age where I really shouldn't be falling. Do you know what I mean? I knew it the minute I fell. When you're young and you fall, your first thought is, I hope nobody saw me. When I fell, my first thought was, I hope somebody saw me.
I know, right? Let's make it a terrific Tuesday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And be sure to take some time today. Just thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.